Hello, fellow watch lovers, nerds, enthusiasts, or however you identify. You're listening to 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast with your hosts, Andrew, and my good friend, Everett. Here, we talk about watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like. Everett, how are you?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm doing all right. It's been a longer week than we normally go in between recordings. So I feel
Yeah, we had some things come up this week.
And just we haven't had to sat down in a while. But yeah, I'm good. There's a I don't know if I've talked about it, but we got a puppy.
You're going to Europe?
A couple. I did talk about that. We got a puppy.
I don't know that you have talked about it on the show. In fact, it was like it took me by surprise. You sent a photograph of an animal that I did not recognize. And I was like, wait a second, is this living with you? It seemed like the decision-making process was brief.
Oh, no, it wasn't. It's been happening for a long time. I've just sort of been, I'm sort of anti, right? And it's not because I'm anti-dog or it's not because I don't love puppies or I'm not
going to. It's a whole nother responsibility.
That's right.
That falls on you.
Why are we doing this? Why are we going to create this? Anyway, that's a different story. But we did get a new puppy. So the deal is my wife's sister has bred these puppies. She bred her dog with another dog. And then they made puppies, nine of them.
They just put them in the backyard and said, get to work.
You know, I don't actually know. I think it was slightly more, I don't know if professional is the right word, official than that. There was like a
candles and music.
Maybe, yes. I think there was like a drop off in like a period of time. It was like a matter of days where her dog was not there and was at just getting porked.
And did they do a DNA test to make sure the dad is the dad that they think it is?
You know, I don't think, maybe, I don't know. So these dogs are, they're half, half Cavalier Spaniel and half poodle. They're Cavapoos. Do you know what that is?
I do. Cause you have one.
Okay. I guess.
I saw her over there the other day or maybe yesterday or 2 days ago.
Yeah.
With a couple of them frolicking in the front yard.
Right. Okay. So that's the deal. Because this is my wife's sister, because this is Kim's sister that has the dogs, oftentimes there is more than one puppy at my house, which I have to admit, not the worst thing in the world.
No, a puppy party is not kind of the peak party situation.
Especially because, like, by and large, they're not mine. There is the one that stays.
They leave and they're adorable. They weigh like 18 ounces.
That's right. Our puppy is, I think, the runt of the litter. And I want to say she's about 7.5 pounds right now at 11 weeks.
I don't believe that she's 7.5 pounds.
I think that's the official weight.
Is it?
Yeah, I think that's the official weight.
Tiny.
And she is just a little puffball. And her name is Megatron.
It's super fitting.
Which I also really like. Yeah, and then right now we've got Megatron's big brother, and he probably weighs twice as much as she does, which is interesting.
Yeah.
But she kind of kicks his ass, too. It's like...
Because she's Megatron. And he's a little bitch pup.
That's right, he's Bowie.
Stupid Bowie.
Yeah. Anyway, no, super fun. So I'm doing well, Andrew. How are you?
I'm good. I'm just... Yeah, chugging along, like taking one day at a time. It's hot all the time right now, and it's not even that hot, right? We're getting to like the high 80s every day. That's like about 20 degrees higher than my
like. Yeah, you're kind of a heat wuss.
Than my top end comfort zone.
Yeah.
So you know,
and just, I love it. 83 is like my favorite thing in the world.
I will tolerate,
especially if I have AC.
Only if you have AC.
Like if I can sleep at 68 and be in like 80 all day.
69. No, 75 is like my top end comfort zone. And that's with air conditioning in my residence and car. And basically every time I'm outside.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I do like the warmth.
No. So it's just been a little hotter than I've enjoyed, so I just like kind of feel sluggish all the time. And
yeah, fair enough.
But you know what? It's not Texas. And I think about that all the time. The first summer I lived there, we had 100 consecutive days over 100 degrees.
Oof.
And for those of you doing the math, that's more than 3 months of just every day over 100 degrees. And I remember at the end of that August, I was like getting reverse seasonal affective disorder in that I would come home from work and turn the tap to cold and pour hot water out because the groundwater was so hot. And I was like,
oh, yeah,
sad and depressed. And I just wanted to feel cold. Like the water out of your, like the coldest shower you could take was still a warm shower.
Yeah.
I would go to stores that had beer caves so I could go in inside their beer cave and just stand and experience cool air.
You know, we're about 6 minutes. I don't know if I've ever told this story on the pod, but when I was in the Army for a brief period of time, I was like a JAG that was attached to a cav unit, and we did a rotation at the National Training Center, which is at Fort Irwin, which is sort of like sandwiched in between Death Valley and the Mojave Desert. Anyway,
it is the Mojave.
It's very fucking hot. So, you know, in the summer, and I was there at end of July. So you're
as one does. I don't think anyone's ever gone there outside of the month of July.
Right. Right.
NTC in February? Nah. July.
So, you know, it's like, you know, 110 to 115 if almost every day, like peak temperature sort of in that range.
And at night it gets down to 90.
And it's a, you know, it's a simulated, you know, it's basically like an extended patrol, right? So you leave like cantonment, the sort of quote unquote base area with the Burger King, and you pass through the gates and you're in country, right? Mm-hmm. You are, you know, they prohibit you from having cell phones. You're like totally detached from the world. Well, my rotation, somebody screwed up and we couldn't find the ice. So there's ice. We know there's ice, but we couldn't find the ice. So what we had was water buffaloes baking in the sun all day. We had no cold. There was no cold in our lives. Everything was hot. And I think in the middle of the rotation, I wound up, I was a judge advocate, right? So I'm not fucking doing anything important. And so at one point in the rotation, this photographer who I knew comes through and he's like, hey, I'm trying to get to the tank range. And I'm like, yeah, I'll take you. I don't know where it is, but I go grab my OC and we like are driving up this ridge and we get to the tippy top of this ridge. And, you know, I find out I'm about to see like a big fireworks show, a military fireworks show. Which is awesome. But then I see this Humvee, and on the back of the Humvee, there's one of those orange Igloo Gatorade containers. Mm-hmm. And the OC is like kind of nods at me. He's like, go ahead. This is a no-no, right? Not supposed to do this.
It's the noest of no's.
But I get a nod from the OC, the observer controller. They're basically like safeties. And
yeah.
Right.
That's yeah. They're range safeties, yeah. Judges.
He gives me a nod. And so I go over and I can still remember the feeling, Andrew, as I pulled that just, lever, just a little. I could feel like the little pops of water coming out, the cold water. And this is like day six, right?
You'd like just gotten there.
Day six, no cold water. I mean, you change your perspective pretty quick. Anyway, so like I feel this cold. Gosh, I will never forget that feeling. And then I think the next day they found our ice. They're like, oh, we found the ice.
I remember I would do, I think daily, 20-foot box, like reefer box, because I had a reefer box in my company.
That's not weed, by the way, you guys.
It was a refrigerated container unit. But I had a reefer box and I would do daily ice runs when we were in the field. So we'd go through 20 feet of like a 20 foot container volume of ice every day, out in the training areas of Fort Hood.
But that's, you know, that's for like a battalion size or maybe even a brigade size.
It was a battalion.
Yeah. Anyway, I was in a headquarters unit. We had ice. We couldn't find it.
It was just your reefer box was just sitting alone, chugging away.
That's right.
Chilling your ice.
That's right. Anyway, that's my story about being cold after being hot. To add on to your story, Andrew, I think it's about time that, because we're not here to talk about
ice and hot. We are here to talk about. I have a thing, and this is an interesting thing. And
wait,
actually,
wait.
Oh, sorry.
I want to get started.
Go ahead and cut that out.
As if I edit. Do you want to get us started?
Yes. Oh my gosh. I have something that, it's not often that something like this comes out that actually kind of catches my interest and gets me excited. There's a lot of interesting things that happen in the watch world. There's four, let's say four, there is 600 hours
of us talking about
the interesting things about the watches or the watch industry.
I think thereabouts. It's got to be pretty close to that.
This is 401 or 402.
Yeah, 401.
And we assume they're all an hour and a half.
Roughly.
So that's 600.
Yeah.
I'm not like a wizard or anything, but that's how math works. This is something that really piqued my interest. The X-Band Smart Strap. It does the smart work for your mechanical watch. So here's what got me interested. Here's like what grabbed me. I think there are a lot of really good arguments to abandon mechanical watches in favor of smartwatches. I think there's as many arguments in favor as there are against. In so much as there are people who dual wrist so they can wear their smartwatch and their mechanical watch. I think there's more arguments against that type of behavior than there are in favor of it. But this very intriguing thing resolves that for a very small window of watches. So what we have here is an X band where the clasp is the smart device. And it comes with a cut-to-fit FKM rubber strap. And it does all the things that your Oura Ring or your Apple Watch or take your pick of smart devices, like smart worn devices, do, but replaces but lives in place of your watch clasp on FKM. I can't speak to the quality of the FKM. I have to say, just from looking at renderings and even product photography, it looks like it's going to be pretty good.
FKM is FKM, right? Like, I think dimensionally you get some variation and flexibility. Like,
but these are nice and thick. These aren't like weird, thin, flimsy FKM. They look to be the right thickness, the right texture. The clasp itself is... it says 44 millimeters, but I think that could be accurate. It's going to be a long clasp, initially. But for what you're getting, which is the smart wearable device that fits flush against your wrist because you can cut to length your FKM strap. So you get a custom fit smart device that you can swap out onto all of your 20 millimeter lug watches that comes in four different colors. I think I would have preferred like an all steel option, but it looks like there's just the four color match to the strap rubber color in white, black, orange, and green. And so reading this, I'm like, oh man, this is going to be either like a dud and cost nothing or a dud and cost a bucket load. These are $279. These are going to be available on Kickstarter. I'm intrigued by this.
Yeah, I'm going to make a prediction.
It's going to be a bust. But
no, I'm intrigued. I don't think it's going to be a bust. I think that they'll sell enough of this to make it viable. I do, actually. I think this is pretty clever. I'm going to make a prediction, though. My prediction is specific, that Gen 2 of this device has a GPS. Because that, going through the specs, so you've got a heart rate, sleep, blood oxygen, stress activity monitor. You've got 40 quote unquote sports modes. You've got an accelerometer, which is interesting and kind of fun.
That's probably how it's capturing your step count.
That's right. That's how it captures activity, movement tracking. You've got temperature sensor, obviously. You've got a lot of clever things, but I think that you know, you're not going to get sort of compatibility with Strava or whatever because it doesn't monitor, it doesn't monitor mm-hmm. GPS. That's my, that's the one thing I read that I was like, you know, that is, I think, a miss here. And it could be that they couldn't squeeze it in.
I think to hold it at $279 for initial offering, I think you can't squeeze in GPS.
Yeah, and I don't know. But that's my prediction, is that Gen 2 of this, or perhaps an upgraded version of this, comes with a GPS. Because I think for me to make the leap, like, I don't care about, like, how did I sleep last night? I know. You know how I know?
Poorly. That's how I slept last night. I know.
So, I know a lot of people are very sort of data-driven when it comes to this kind of stuff. And they really, like, that's a big part of their life is tracking that sort of stuff, especially in 2026. But for me, that's never been the appeal. In fact, the only smartwatch functionality that I've ever thought I really would like to have this on a regular basis is GPS. It's the only one. I don't want text messages on my watch. I don't, you know, although I can see the utility there, right? It's just not something I'm interested in. The only thing I've ever thought. No, I love
being able to ignore my phone.
Yeah.
You can't, right? You can't say, oh, I didn't see it if it's attached to your wrist.
The only thing I've ever wanted out of a smartwatch, and I've ever thought, gosh, that would be so convenient, was GPS. And so, and maybe I'm in a minority. I'm certainly not alone in that.
I think we are in a minority.
It could be. But that's my prediction, is that Gen 2 of this comes with a GPS.
I think the only part of that I disagree with is that I think Gen 2 is probably expansion into other sizes.
Oh, sure, maybe.
And then we see future iterations that include GPS. Because they need to test viability here. And I think this is a really interesting way to capture those people who are kind of fence riding and perhaps the dual wristers. Oops, smacked my microphone.
Now, I will say we're looking at some renders that have a curved end.
Is this going to be it, but then other renders
that show a straight, and obviously a straight end is the play here. But I wonder if, I didn't actually look at the Kickstarter in depth, but I wonder if that is, you know, if there's going to be enough draw of this for them to say, well, here is a Submariner shaped end link, which, you know, that would be the first play, right? Because that gets you
captures everyone who wears a sub.
Well, not only that, but there's a lot of watches that come out with nearly identical dimensions for obvious reasons. So they want to get into those ecosystems. So
there are people who do that.
There are. Monta is the one I think about. Yeah. So anyway, we shall see this. I'm kind of into it, Andrew. I think it's pretty clever.
I'm really intrigued by this. It solves a problem that didn't exactly exist, but it fills a hole in the ecosystem that did certainly exist.
Yeah, I think so.
There's some interesting overlap appeal there. And doing a 20mm cut to length, like, short of doing customizable right out of the gate, that's pretty clever.
Yeah, I didn't read, Andrew. Did you have a chance to look? Is there micro adjustment capability here? Because in a perfect world, you'd set this to a length and have, you know, a couple millimeters on either side of that.
It does not look to me like there's micro adjustment, but it's hard to tell because these are all renderings. There's no open clasp photos.
Because, you know,
but it's a long enough clasp, but it looks like it has to have.
I might need a micro adjustment between like
noon and four.
Between 7:30 when I put my watch on at 4:00.
When I'm hot.
So I actually think this is really cool. It's not the type of thing that would normally tickle my fancy.
So here's what it looks like to me. There is ribbing on the bottom third of each end of the strap with a channel hole through. And there are screws. So it looks like, depending on how wide those ribs are, that's where you're going to cut them. And then you mount your strap into those pinholes. So it does not look like there's going to be any kind of micro adjust.
Well, and because it's FKM, you're going to get a little bit of flex just in. My concern here would be, you know, you order, and maybe there's going to be the ability to get additional straps, but
there,
you
know,
you cut it on a, straps. You get it in February, and then by the time it's June, you're like, oh, this fucking thing doesn't fit anymore. So anyway, this is pretty, I think it's pretty clever. I'm into it. I can see some problems, but.
I thought I saw,
or at least some potential problems. You could buy
just the rubber.
Yeah, that they obviously are gonna need to be able to provide replacement rubber.
$89 for replacement or different color.
That's steep, rubber. But that's steep.
Yeah, it is. But to have markers along the strap where to cut.
Yeah,
but almost like links.
Yeah, no, remove. I mean it's in the range. It's a lot of money though.
Yeah, I mean they're paying $13 for it, and they're making some money back.
Yeah, I mean for the rubber component, they're probably paying less than $10. It would be my guess at any volume. So,
yeah, this is clever. I like it. I am intrigued by it. If they hold past their Kickstarter launch and can do a Gen 2, I think I'll.
Yeah, where are they at in?
They just launched on the 8th. Let's see.
And this is, we are linking to a sponsored post. I don't know that we're responsible for telling you that, but we're not sponsored. We're linking to a sponsored
post. So it's out of Hong Kong. they are at 12,600 pledged of their $1,900 goal.
Yeah, which is almost absurdly low. Like that, it almost seems like they're using Kickstarter as a marketing platform versus,
as opposed to like an actual funding platform.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, well, very interesting. We shall see, and I don't know. Maybe we'll keep you updated. There's probably a few folks that have taken a look at this. I know Random Rob, I think Random Rob took a look at this, or maybe I'm conflating this with something else. Anyway, yeah, pretty cool, man. Pretty cool. Eric Wind.
Do you have anything that you'd like to talk about?
I would like to talk about Eric Wind.
Oh.
Eric Wind and Rowing Blazers have once again collaborated with Seiko for their fourth version, or their fourth collaboration, their fourth watch collaboration, going back to their sort of original, this sort of staple design, which is to say the Rally Diver design, which is a fairly enigmatic design. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but
it looks really good.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. It's got some charm. It's got some of that like 70s charm to it.
Reminds me of like Speed Racer is like kind of that feel.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it feels a little bit like, like Japanese for the Western world kind of deal. Which, of course, it is precisely that. It is Japanese for the Western world. I don't actually know a whole lot about Rowing Blazers.
I don't know anything about Rowing Blazers outside of the collaboration watches that they've done.
That's right. I
know they use interesting colors.
Yeah.
And typically like a kind of perplexing color palette that for some reason works. This is not that though. This doesn't feel Rowing Blazers at all.
It does to me. You know, they've sort of got that like Take Ivy vibe, and it's fun. You know, but again, I know nothing about the company. I've never been to a Rowing Blazers, as if it's like a store. I don't know. I don't know what it is. I actually don't even know what it is.
So many of these brands that do collaborations that they do worse than us in burying the lead. It's like, oh, you probably heard of this brand. It's like, am I the asshole?
Hey, Andrew, you need anything? I'm going to head down to the Rowing Blazers.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe that's it. It's in New York. They've got everything's in New York. Anyway, so we've got two watches here, and I really like them both, and I think based on your comments that you do too. So we've got a 42mm 5KX that comes in blue, And we've got a 38 millimeter 5KX that comes in green.
I like that.
And it's a British racing green.
Oh, Jen from Lost is one of their ambassadors.
Oh, I love Jen.
Me too.
Hey, look at that fucking guy.
Yeah, he's somehow way more handsome now than 20 years ago when he was in Lost.
I think he was always a pretty handsome devil.
Yeah, but he's
I mean, there was that whole like...
He's like Clooney in it right now, though.
There was that whole abusive husband vibe to his character, which, you know...
It was a cultural misunderstanding.
and both of these colors are great. The blue is like, I think, just a really honest royal blue. I described the green as a British racing green. I think that's accurate enough. They come on bracelets, but they also come with nylon pass-throughs. These are not fancy schmancy seatbelt nylon pass-throughs. These are sort of old school, down and dirty military style nylon pass-throughs, but the nylon pass-throughs come in the opposite color. So if you get the blue watch, you'll get the green. And if you get the green watch, you'll get the blue, which I like. I don't know why I like it, but I think it's fun. We've got rally bezels on both of these. They're just 5KXs. I mean, this is what Seiko does. They're like, here's this watch that we make and sell a bucket load of. You can use this as your palette.
You can change the bezel and the dial.
And you can
sort of.
And you can put text at 6 o'clock.
And if you really, really want, you may put something on the case back.
Gosh, Andrew. What more to say? I think nothing, except that I like these. I think I am... You made a face earlier. You made a face. When I said a 38 millimeter in green, you made a happy face. And I'm with you on that happy face.
Yes. The green is good. The blue's good, but a 38 in green.
It's a great size. Yeah.
I love 38 for this style of... watch.
You know, so I do have one qualm about the 38 millimeter 5KX, which is that it does not have the same... The SKX 013 had kind of a particular way it did the lugs, and the 38 millimeter 5KX excuse that. It's my only complaint about this watch, which is a really weird complaint. And it's not about this watch. It's about the 38 millimeter 5KX. But
yeah. Can I tell you about Rowing Blazers briefly?
Yeah, please.
So it is a clothing brand and design lab founded
by... A design lab.
Founded by designer, author, archaeologist, and former U.S. national team coxswain? Coxswain? Mm-hmm. Jack Carlson.
That's the boss of the crew team, right?
No, that's the... Coxswain. Oh. The coxswain's the caller. I think a coxswain is a...
It's a lot of cocks here.
Vital, non-rowing... Oh, yeah. So I thought it was a coxswain. Oh, that's how you say it.
Yeah, this is terrific.
That's not how I would spell it. It's a non-rowing member.
So it turns out a coxswain doesn't exist.
It's a coxswain.
Except in your head.
Well, it's spelled COCKS space WAYNE.
Uh-huh. And it's pronounced coxswain.
Yeah, I guess.
All right. And we're learning things.
That's not how it's spelled. It's spelled COXSWAIN. But a coxswain, that word doesn't make sense. Anyhow, it's a their whole shtick is a subversive.
Subversive?
Yeah.
This take watch on does, preppy. This does not feel subversive. Nothing about this feels subversive to me.
Where's the word? They said they...
D. Snyder, subversive.
Somewhere in here.
It's Rowing like Blazers and Eric Wind?
Subverting preppiness. So it's just a... High-end Abercrombie.
Andrew, I really like that polo on you. It's very subversive.
Yeah, thank you. Not wearing one.
You're wearing a 40 and 20 shirt.
I wasn't wearing a shirt earlier. Oh, wow, we've derailed.
What's next, buddy?
Who knows? I want to take some time to talk about this. So actually, I need to do some digging. So I'm going to London next month.
You're going to wind up in London.
Yeah, we're going to spend a couple days in London. We already booked our appointment at the Christopher Ward showroom. Sick. And now I need to figure out how to go to the Doghouse.
What's the Doghouse?
Studio Underdogs.
Oh, show. Sure.
That happened at the acquisition of...
Yeah, right. I remember. Why don't you just email Richard?
I'm going to. Okay. I just haven't.
Okay. Do you need me to make the connection? Do you have his email address?
I know how to use internet.
Okay. Well, I have his phone number.
I don't... Yeah, I might text him.
Okay.
That might be easier. So Studio Underdog has the O2 series Gen 2. The O2 series, we haven't seen a lot of iterative design from Studio Underdog. We've seen new lines, right? We've seen new dials. This is a slimmer case, bigger power reserve, and new colors.
I see what you're saying.
This is a totally new watch in the version 2.
Generational iterations is what you're talking about.
Right. We've seen a lot of new colors. We've seen some micro changes, but by and large, Studio Underdog's watches have remained pretty true to form.
We're introducing new SKUs and or new lines, but not improving on
price. Yes, yeah, not evolving an existing line. So we have new stuff in the O2 series 2. And, you know, as much as we liked them before, they have gotten better. 37.5 millimeter case, 11.5 thick with a crystal. Without the dome sapphire, 9.4.
And this is for a chronograph. I mean, obviously.
These are their manual winding three hands.
These are the three handers.
So, yeah. But it's still 9.4 for a manual three hand with that sapphire dial. We have four colorways that have come out. One really cool black and red that like looks like a spaceship, like very Tron-y in the loom. What would you call that blue?
Oh, that's a good question for me.
The dark blue with the red minute track.
Oh,
this light blue.
Let me pull. I don't have it up yet. I'm sorry.
We have the traditional like pink lemonade, lemon ombre into pink, and then a really, really deep.
Yeah, this is a periwinkle.
That was the word I was going to choose. This
is a periwinkle for sure.
But I thought you were going to say cornflower.
Cornflower is much darker than this.
You like to say cornflower blue. I don't know why.
Cornflower is a specific color. This is not it.
We've discussed my...
This is maybe a dusty periwinkle.
Probable color blindness.
There's just enough purple in there to be periwinkle.
I thought I was going to say periwinkle or maybe baby's breath. Isn't baby's breath? Are those are blue?
Those are those little flowers. They're the little white ones, I think.
I thought they were blue.
Nope. I think they're the toxic ones, the toxic white ones.
Yeah, like baby's breath.
In any event, I think I think powder blue or periwinkle, depending on the light.
Okay, so what we have here is...
They call it Stephanie, by the way.
Oh, like Tiffany's sister?
Yes.
The hotter, sluttier one?
Yeah, that's right.
The red is really good. It's this really full, metallic-y, Merlot-y, like just gorgeous, luxurious red. And then the rest of the colors totally, like all these colors make sense. Every single one of these
that sort of petrol purple is one of the new ones along with the red, but I really like it.
You just immediately recognize it as Studio Underdog. I think this is a really cool upgrade because we haven't seen true upgrades ever.
Yeah, never. No, this is the first. Yeah.
$1,200 on these. These are going to, these became available on the 7th.
Did you talk about the new movement?
No.
So these come with the new Sellita SW200-2 M-Power Plus. So this is the new hand-wound Sellita with 65 or 60 whatever, some hours.
63 of power hours, which I think is interesting for Studio Underdog to have secured an exclusive contract with Siegel and then move away from Siegel.
Well, but I mean, this is, you know, this isn't Siegel's space, right? You know, Siegel's got that sort of Chronograph space locked down, but this is, it makes me like Richard cares about movements.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to spend, he wants to be economical, but he cares about movements. We talked about this last year, like who's going to do this? And I opined like, I don't think we're going to see a lot of people buying in until for a while. But I think this is now the second watch we've seen that's come out with the new Sellita movement. And of course you've got production timelines or whatever. And I don't think Sellita did a good job sort of getting these out before they made the announcement. That was our last argument, I think, on the show.
I don't think we argued about it. I think we were confused by it. We were equally confused about how do you launch a product with nothing to support it?
Yeah.
It's like launching a movie trailer that hasn't gone into production yet.
And my position was, I think they should have sat on it. I think they should have made a couple of relationships and really pushed hard to have a couple people knock these movements out of the water. But here we are now, what, a year later, and okay, this is interesting. Richard, I like the fact that you're doing this. I mm-hmm. like that we got a new movement in here. So this is really cool. I'm into it.
I like it. I like everything about it. The new color is great. The old colors are good, but seeing an iterative improvement on his watches is also really great.
Yeah. I am going to now talk about, I think, a boring release.
Okay.
With that said, it tickled me a little bit.
Just like me.
Just like you. Oris, last year, abandoned the Divers 65 in lieu of the Divers date. And I think we discussed that sort of decision. You know, this watch was first released in 1965, thus when Oris sort of re-released it. They called it the Diver 65. I liked it. I thought that was charming. I am not completely sure why they abandoned that naming convention, but we've now got the Diver's Date, which is a watch that I thought Oris hasn't done a lot with. You know, the Diver 65, for 5 years, it was... there was a new Diver 65
every week,
every quarter, right? You know, or a couple probably, you know, and then you've got bronze ones and you got pink ones.
Limited edition imaginable.
And in contrast, now going on, I think year two of the Diver's Date, we still just have the original three configurations, but Oris has now released a regular catalog model of the Diver's Date with an olive green dial. And it is exactly as boring as you'd expect. It is a black bezel, olive green dial, regular catalog release, and it's terrific.
It has me hot and bothered, and I do not typically get aroused by Oris. This is titillating.
So can I pause talking about the Oris? Did we talk about the price for the Series 2?
$1,200.
$1,200.
Okay. You interrupted me, but I did say it's $1,200.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to make sure we got that out. So this is still just a Diver's Date. There's no difference, but it's got a green dial, which feels very Tudor.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it. I don't mind. I don't mind the approach. They're saying it's not limited. You don't have to try to fucking log into Hodinkee's website or something.
You don't have to like build a chat bot to beat everyone else to the purchase.
They do have Oris's caliber 733, which is not in-house. It's a Sellita 200. Base model, which has been, zhuzhed. Did I do it right?
You did do it right. The hip movement and everything, too.
Which has been zhuzhed by Oris. still 12.1 thick. We've got 200 meters of water resistance, which is more than I think the 100 that the 65 often came in. Steel bracelet or tropic rubber. It's great. This is not anything to tell you about besides olive green dial. Right?
Yeah, and it's Oris. So
date date is the only option. So I think that's the only, that's the only potential limitation to this watch. You might like this date, and or you might like this watch and think, but I'd really like to not have a date.
This watch has so much dial.
Don't get that choice.
That I feel like the date is almost necessary.
And a 6 o'clock date, and a 6 o'clock date that appears in lieu of
a marker.
The 6 o'clock marker. So not a true diver, which is interesting because they call it the diver's date. And I think there's some limitation to that. I think that's
anyway. That's why it's divers, because for it to be a diver,
yeah,
it has to meet ISO specs. And that 6 o'clock date doesn't meet ISO specs. So the divers is their loophole.
And, you know, Seiko gets around that by way of like, you know, several brands get around that by way of tucking a little loom plot on the outside. Mm-hmm. Oris has eschewed that function or whatever. So... they just say,
I don't think Seiko has any 6 o'clock date windows on a dive watch.
No, but when they do have date windows that appear at 3, they stuff a little loom plot out at the side.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and other brands do this too. This is not just Seiko, but Oris has not done that here. So, this is not an ISO spec'd dive watch, but it is a diver's date.
Now it's. It's lost all appeal to me unless it's ISO certified. I'm not interested.
Right? Because when you're sitting in the backyard, there's nothing more that bugs me than knowing I can't go on a dive.
Yeah. I mean, I'm ISO certified. So.
No, you're not.
I could be.
Could maybe.
I mean, we don't know. There are a lot of ISO specs. I could fall under some right now.
What's next?
Next up, let's talk about another boring, but also interesting. IFL watches the koi fish concept with the Soyosa Shore Mako. I think the Soyosa is a really interesting platform for an IFL watches. Because we see, you know, it's just different enough from the typical IFL watches design platforms. I like it. And I really like the Soyosa as just a watch in general. I think it's cool. I also don't care, right? It's black koi fish swimming in a circle around the dial. I think maybe this is the last IFL watches that I talk about. Kind of like in the way we don't talk about moon swatches anymore because they're still dropping a skew a week. And they're just not... They were cool. They remain cool. But they're noteworthy factor has been so diluted.
It's just less interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you know, what's funny is I don't think I've ever, so I've even probably commented on the show about, oh, well, you know, more is more and people are saying, oh, I'm tired of all these releases. I've never felt that way about the Moonswatch, but IFL collabs, I'm like, another fucking IFL. Okay.
I like them. I think
they're obviously beautiful. Selling watches.
I think the Soyosa platform is really interesting because we see so many on the Breville, the Seville.
Sevilla.
Yeah, the Sevilla. And what's the other one they do a ton on?
I don't know.
There's like two watches that IFL Watches does a lot of collaborations on or special editions on. So seeing branching out into the Soyosa, I think is neat. I think it's cool for Citizen to get this watch a little bit more publicity, because I think this is a true sleeper hit in the way of affordable watches. Not this particular one, but the Soyosa in general.
Yep.
You know, I'm gonna start kicking you.
I don't know. I'm just tired of. I don't know. It's not. You know. I think the other thing is. It's not a type of watch that I want. I just don't want it. Like, I appreciate what it is. I love the fact that they're each hand painted. Like, that's fucking rad, but I don't want a hand painted dial. I just don't want it. And it's super affordable, too. I mean,
yeah, they're under $1,000 for a hand painted limited edition of 200. I mean, the Soyosa is like $400.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you get a limited edition from Hamilton and it's like
12,000.
Well, no, but you know,
they make 12,000 of them.
And they haven't really done anything, right? Like
they changed the strap to the one that you wanted on it anyway.
Or there's like, you know, oh, this is a different color dial. Like, these are hand painted. Like, someone did that. I can appreciate that. So I'm not really...
I feel like you're arguing against yourself right now.
I'm trying not to poo-poo it. I'm just... It's not my thing. So that's... I'm trying to make clear I can appreciate what it is without having any interest in this fucking weird watch. Fair?
Okay.
Fair? Let's talk about something I do like. And in fact, of all the releases this week that either one of us sent links to, this is the only one that I was like, this is really fucking cool. Temporal Works. We talked about Temporal Works last year when they released their, what do they call them? When they released, I can't remember what they call it, but basically watch. It's a Patek 565 remake that they released with a sector dial. You know, it was polished. It felt very much like, yeah, this could have been a Patek. This could have been a 565. 565 is a really cool model that Patek did a lot of stuff with. In fact, if you look up Patek 565s, you're going to see 8 gazillion dials. They're all different, right? There's like, they just had so many different configurations because this is a boutique watch and they were doing boutique things with this boutique watch. And Temporal Works is, so if you don't know, this is a watch brand that sort of popped up last year from Armory's co-founder Mark Cho with watch designer Elliot Hammer. And here they've taken that same platform, which is a 37 millimeter 565 remake, and they've blasted it, put some pilot hands on it, and they're calling it the Series A Rambler. This is basically a blasted field watch, field pilot 565, which is the weirdest thing. And it works really, really well. In fact, I remember I didn't really love the first, Series A is what they called it. The Series A, yeah, the Sector. They released two Sector dials when they did that, and then they released a red dial. And I think we both...
Just a red only, yeah.
We both agreed that the red dial was the most compelling of the three, if I remember right. But this is polished, very sort of... austere, and I just wasn't wild about any of them. I was like, okay, this is cool, kind of expensive. This one, on the other hand, the Rambler, I'm digging it. So we've got painted brass dials, matte finished brass dials.
In one of the photographs, they have a misprinted dial featured.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, look.
It's got that extra little... It's a misprint.
I wonder if that's an AI...
No, that looks like a product photo.
You know what I think that is, Andrew? I think that that is a retouching error.
Oh, perhaps, yeah.
I think that's a retouching error. That's really funny.
Because I saw that and I was like, why is that there? This isn't a novelty watch. And then in other photographs of it or renderings, that's not there. So it's...
Yeah, I think it's a retouching error. Like an artifact.
Yeah.
These come in two colors, a black and a red bean. Both of these are matte finished. We've got very Zen style pilot hands. We've got, you know, at the 45s or maybe at the 40s, we've got these white lines that kind of break up the dial because the dial is sort of open,
but not exactly.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Like an interpretation of a sector dial that's off axis.
That's right. The black one comes in a nylon green, and the red bean comes on sort of a khaki strap. I think these are textile on leather. But they also come with a...
Khaki looks like it's a suede strap.
Oh yeah, I think it's Alcantara. Yeah. It's soft gray Alcantara. With a NATO option, but you can also get a blasted Stibe mesh bracelet for $250.
And that is the way.
Dude, it looks so good. A blasted Stibe, I never thought like, oh, I need this, but I need a blasted Stibe. It looks awesome. These are really great. They're not inexpensive, considering you're getting sort of a pretty standard, bog standard stainless steel watch with kind of a boring movement, Salita 210. These coming in at like what,
2670.
I think they're priced too high.
Oh wait, oh, no, the 2670 is the last one. What are these?
Yeah, 2500.
Oh, okay.
I think these are priced too high. But I do really like it. I just wish it was. Yeah, one of these comments here on the Hodinkee says, looks more like a Patek 565 crossed with a Zen 556. And
it does look like a 556. It accurate. Kind of looks, it's not undone. It's, what's the brand that does watches just like this? I can't think of it. We talk about them quarterly.
I don't know.
It doesn't matter. This is a familiar watch. This kind of austere. It's kind of like a new version, like a new era of minimalism that has, you know, we're seeing some wash, rinse, repeats of design aesthetics.
Yeah. And, you know, cool company, cool people, cool design, probably some lasting appeal in that sense because of who's making it. So maybe some value there when we talk about like what kind of value is my watch going to retain. With that said, I do think that I think they're kind of reaching for the stars on that price. They'll sell these and that's fine, but I think it's a much, if this was $1,700, I'd be like, this is rad.
Yeah.
But for $2,500, I'm kind of like,
yeah, it does give you a little bit of pause. Cause that's a different segment,
right? They're 10 millimeters thick, and the side profile on this looks terrific.
Yes,
the side profile looks terrific. I think it's a wrist hugger. But yeah, that's my thoughts. I really like the watch. I don't really like the price. I'm ho-hum at best on the movement.
Yeah, I think the price is hard to justify against everything else we know about the brand and what we know about the watch.
Andrew, we are at the point where we start making decisions.
I've already closed the tabs.
So you're done. And I think I'm good. There was, you know, the only other thing I really thought maybe I'd try to get to was the new Cocktail Times, but they're new Cocktail Times.
They're just new Cocktail Times. They're all gorgeous as we'd expect them to be.
And they're fine. They're fine. And then a new light blue Longines Conquest Heritage Central Power Reserve, which is a watch I should hate and don't. It's a beautiful dial color.
Stephanie blue.
Yeah, precisely. So yeah, Andrew, other things, what do you got?
Okay, put your hand in my pocket.
I will not.
Okay, we'll at least feel this.
Okay. Oh.
Okay, so I was at the store. I need to get a couple new pairs of shorts because it's summertime, it's hot. Like, I just needed to get some new shorts. And I'm like browsing and I see these shorts on the rack. And they're Callaway golf shorts with a 9-inch inseam. And I immediately feel them. And they do not feel like they look. They have a almost like chino-y kind of linen look to them. Like just a little bit of shine. They're golf shorts, right?
Yeah,
they're,
sure.
They're intended to be like almost like as dressy as shorts can get.
Sure.
Right? With a little bit of shine. But the material is that of swim trunks.
Yeah, they're very, very light.
Light. They're stretchy. So I got these for like $27 a pair. Right now on the Callaway website, they are $40 a pair. Man,
Where did you buy them? Who's retailing them?
Nordstrom Rack.
Oh, okay.
They had khaki, navy, and black. I got a khaki and a navy because I wanted a few more pairs of shorts. And I felt them and I was like, oh, these are going to be magical. This is as close to like wearing athletic shorts out in public as I will ever get.
Yeah.
Cause like, I'm not, I'm a grown up. I'm not going to wear basketball shorts or running shorts in public for not participating in those activities.
Yeah.
These are terrific. They're stretchy. They're comfortable. They breathe. Highly recommend. If you're looking for some new shorts that are just like pure comfort, but don't look like they're pure comfort, I think this is like the boy version of Lululemon leggings.
And the price is right. It's hard to. Yeah. And they look great.
Yeah. They look, I mean, as close as shorts can get to dress attire.
I got a quick story. So my children right now are at the theater, the like theater that has live people on a stage making noises with their mouth holes. And
donkeys,
my middle child, who is the most rebellious, came out in a t-shirt and basketball shorts and Crocs
tracks.
And we're like, Lou, you need to go put on a pair of pants. You're going to the theater. Like, you got to wear pants. And of course, we live in Eugene, so there's going to be all types, but it's like...
Motherfucker came out in like patterned pajama pants, didn't he?
No. He came out in a pair of sharp jeans.
Look at that.
Yeah. But he had taken off his t-shirt and put on a sleeveless basketball shirt. And we're like...
How did you go forward and backward in one movement?
It's pure rebellion. He knew exactly what he was doing. And we were like... You need to go try again. And he, of course, harumps and stomps his feet a little bit, buddy. It's like, gosh, guy.
you were 50% right both times.
It's a power move, you know, with that one. But I was just like,
yeah. At some point, he's got to realize, like, buck all you want. You're not going to win.
You mentioned your comment about I'm a grown up, and I was like, yeah, right? Like, at some point, we just like, you're going to go to, like, can you just for the next 3 hours of your life not look like an asshole?
No, that's an impossibility for me. Most people, I think, can do it, though.
I've got another thing, Andrew.
Do me.
You're not going to be able to link this one.
Because I'm not doing the notes.
That's also true. I have spent the last, I don't know, and maybe you can verify or validate or correct me on this, but I think for now about 4 months, I've been looking for a motorcycle, a specific motorcycle, and been struggling with it. So what I did is I decided, you know, I want to do two things. One, I want to purchase a motorcycle, but two, more importantly, I want to learn about motorcycle repair, maintenance, etc.
You have like Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Repair.
I don't, and I've never even read it. So
Who recommended that to us?
I don't know, but I need to get into that. I do need to check that out.
Somebody's other thing on the show.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I just don't remember who it was.
So, I do know the footnotes, but yes. So I am going to just very briefly talk about my philosophy here when I look, because it changed. At very first, I was looking for a dual sport motorcycle, and I quickly kind of went away from that. But there are a number of dual sport motorcycles that are very well supported with the aftermarket. Super easy to work on, yada, yada, yada. I quickly kind of went away from that towards a more traditional street motorcycle, but I was looking for something kind of specific. I was looking for something that was well supported with aftermarket, right? That was a big one. That was going to be mechanically simple and straightforward.
So that locks you into an era.
Sure. That locks you into sort of like
70s, 80s, 90s.
Correct, Amudo. Exactly right, Andrew. And really, you know, you getting into the 80s, you start
getting some computerization and some digital. So like you're kind of in the seven, like if 60s exists, but you're in a 60-year-old bike.
And then, and you know, so one of the things that comes up a lot is the CB504, which is one of the best motorcycles ever made, blah, blah, blah. You know, certainly, and I'm going Japanese too, right? Like, let's just get that out of the way. We're going Japanese.
I'm turning Japanese. I think I'm turning.
For many reasons, but price and longevity, right? Mm-hmm. Japanese motorcycles in that era were the most reliable motorcycles on earth. I don't care, like Harley, it doesn't matter.
Harleys are known for being bags of ass.
So
like they're a constant project.
I start kind of, and now I'm like getting a little bit more into the weeds. Like, what do I want? The 454, the 500s, the CB504, the reason I went away from that is really simple. Four carburetors.
Yeah.
So what I want is four stroke, two carburetors, because old carburetors need service. And four is exactly, mathematically speaking, two times as many as two.
Yes. Right? And carb rebuild, though therapeutic, pain in the ass.
Kind of a pain in the ass. So I settled on a motorcycle that I've since, this has been about 4 months now, fallen in love with this motorcycle. The idea of it. Philosophically, I've fallen in love with it. What it is the Yamaha XS650. What this was a Yamaha that was built to compete directly with, in the 70s, kind of the bee's knees of the motorcycle world, which were the British twins. So, you know, Nortons, Bonnevilles, etc. The Yamaha
XS... Indians still fighting in that... It's still a competitor in that era, right?
Yeah, but I don't think... I mean, Indian's American, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So these are British twins, right? So, and British twins, very cool motorcycles. Just cool as shit. But fucking pains in the asses. Leaky, high maintenance, sons of a bitches. So Yamaha comes out with their XS650, which is the same thing. It's a 360 degree, meaning the... meaning the pistons go at the same time, vibrating, but super reliable, fantastic engine based on old German architecture, and it crushes. It crushes. They sell a bunch of them. They're way more reliable. So I'm like, okay, this is the motorcycle for me. I've now spent the better part of the past 4 months looking for something specific. I want one that is not ready to go because I want to get it ready to go. But is also not so ready to go yeah. That I'm going to be in over my head. So that's tough. That's a tough needle to thread, right?
Yeah.
What I don't want is one that's like tits already. Even though it'll need maintenance, I'm not going to have done a lot of that work that I kind of want to do. So, and it's going to be like, they're expensive, right? You're looking at $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 to get one that's like in really good shape. And then even the ones that are kind of shitty are like $2,500. So 4th of July, morning of 4th of July.
I know.
I pull up Facebook Marketplace and I find one. It's in Brownsville, which is about a half hour from here. And it says $500 and got some electrical issues, but everything else is great. And I message the guy and I go, hey, does it turn over? And he's like, look, dude, everything works. Everything works. It's a little rusty because it's been outside for the last year, but the engine is perfect. The only problem is last time I rode it, I was on the freeway and the wiring loom caught on fire. And I was like...
Yeah, that's just a minor thing. Not a big deal.
Well, you know, it's a 1976, 50-year-old wires, right? And I'm like, okay, I'm coming to you. So I call Andrew and I'm like, hey, I need your truck. Andrew's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I'm like, just don't ask questions.
I didn't ask many questions after that.
I came and got your truck, and I went and got a motorcycle. And now I own that motorcycle, Andrew. And that's my other thing for the week, is I, at the age of 45, full midlife crisis, have purchased a 50-year-old motorcycle that I'm going to have to repair before I get it running so that I can learn how to ride a motorcycle.
Yeah, you just – that was actually, a perfect
I'm not pulling
synopsis any, I'm of not what trying. A midlife crisis is. I spent the last 4 months searching for an impossible to find motorcycle, found it, bought it. Shit don't work. Last time it worked, it was on fire. Now I'm going to rebuild it. And then after that, I'm going to learn how to ride it.
It if there's anybody in my life that I would believe could do this, it's me. I'm just I'm gonna say with zero hubris.
You're gonna get that shit running and sell it.
Am I? Who cares? Isn't that the you know?
Yeah. I don't think you're gonna ride it.
Maybe not. I don't know. I might.
I feel like you would look terrible on a motorcycle.
Have you seen my hair?
You like being comfortable far too much to sit on a motorcycle.
Well, but so here's one possibility. I think this is a third possibility. That I rebuild it. I get it running. I make it look gorgeous. I sell it for more money than it's probably worth. And then I take that money and I go get something that is reliable and comfortable and modern.
An Arcimoto.
And then ride that. An Arcimoto. That's a third possibility. But honestly, we'll see. We'll see. Time will tell.
I struggle.
It's always the process with me. You know that.
I know that. I struggle to imagine you on a motorcycle more than like once.
Yeah, that feels mean.
It's not mean. It's objective. Sitting in a saddle, though liberating and freeing, is not particularly comfortable. You like to be comfortable.
I mean, I also like to be uncomfortable. I've run 20 marathons.
Just to say you did,
though. Yeah, almost speechless. You were almost speechless.
Just to say you did.
Yeah, but so you don't run 20 to say you did, Andrew.
You did.
You run.
No, you know you ran the 20th, not because you wanted to, but because you were like, I gotta get to 20.
I don't think so. No. No. I liked it. There's something, there's that. I've got a little bit of like, this is cool. I want to be doing this thing that's slightly uncomfortable and hard.
I wish you well. I think it's a really cool project, and I look forward to being able to watch it unfold.
I'm excited to send pictures to the group thread and videos of it revving for the first time, etc.
It's all your new wiring.
Hey folks, thanks for joining us for this episode of 40 and 20 of the Watch Clicker podcast. You can go to our website, watchclicker.com, and see things about watches. If you want to follow us on social media, you do that at 40and20_watchclicker or at watchclicker, both on Instagram. If you want to support us, and look, you don't have to support us, but I'm telling you, we actually do need support. Patreon.com/40and20. That is where we get all of our funds that we use to keep the show going. No brands pay us, no sponsors. It's all Patreon supported. And for everybody who's on there now, we appreciate you so much. And if you're not, just go check it out. And don't forget to tune back in next, I don't know,
week.
Sometime next week for another hour of watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like.
Bye-bye.